from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
It's the 4th of July weekend, a time for Americans to celebrate our independence and remember the heroism of those who have made and continue to make this country great. This week on Register Radio, we note the incredible work of Catholic military chaplains with a special conversation with Archbishop Timothy Broglio, the shepherd of the Archdiocese of Military Services. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio, along with my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. The life of a priest serving as a military chaplain is a grueling one. Chaplains might find themselves in a war zone one week, spending time at sea on an aircraft carrier the next, and then providing pastoral care to families of soldiers and airmen and women. Archbishop Timothy Broglio knows this life well. Since 2008, he has been the Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Military Services. He could be called the chaplain to all military chaplains in the U.S. Armed Forces. Matthew Bunsen recently spoke with the Archbishop.
Well, Your Excellency, first, welcome and thank you for your gift of time in this. I know our readers will very much appreciate your insights onto a variety of issues.
Well, I'm happy to speak with you this morning and to be able to communicate with your readership as well.
Well, you made a bit of a stir just last week at your speech at the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast, especially on the importance of virtue. What made you choose that particular topic for that prayer breakfast?
Well, it came about really for two reasons. One, I think we often tend to speak about values, and we don't often speak enough about virtues. And there is a distinction. And I think as particularly because it was a Catholic prayer breakfast, it seemed important to stress some of those fundamentals that really should be at the basis of who we are and how we operate in our day-to-day existence. And I think that my premise is that greatness and sanctity is certainly the goal of all of us, are posited on the practice, the authentic practice of virtue. And so I wanted to take advantage of that that stage to get that message across.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that that's especially important today? I mean, it's always important, but given the political divide that we have, much of the acrimony that we see pretty much on a daily basis in politics and in media.
I think that makes it particularly important in our time. And I think also there is a launch of, conscious or unconscious, a launch of counter values that really come into opposition with virtue, in the sense that we're continually told to put ourselves first. We're continually told that material things will bring happiness. There is a tendency, I think, with the wealth of information out there, not to make distinctions. So, and this is important for the political discourse, rather than consider the issue, sometimes it's often just the person who's speaking about one issue or another that determines my position. And I think as Catholics, we have to be more informed when we take a position on a certain issue.
Mm-hmm. And as a shepherd, as one of the leaders of the church in the United States, what's your current sort of diagnosis of the culture in the country?
Well, I think that the timing of Pope Francis's call for an evangelization, a joyful evangelization, is very timely, because I think we need to revive some of the spirit that animated our forefathers in the faith, either when they came to this country or when they sought to practice our faith in this country. Some of that enthusiasm, some of that ability to stand out in a good sense, to stand out justly by our virtue. You know, when you read the Acts of the Apostles and you hear about the primitive community, it was marked by the, well, especially by the practice of charity, but by the virtue and almost in a certain sense daring to be different. And I think that's important in a world where we tend to be numbers, to be classified. There is a certain call to live our Christian virtue in a way that makes us stand out, in, you know, in the most positive interpretation that anyone could give to that phrase.
Mm. And do you find that there are ways today that should be employed to bring everyone together to work for the common good?
Well, obviously, primarily, I think our prayer is very important. I think our practice of charity is extremely important, and I think also an awareness of the advantages that we have as Americans, and that you know, any gift that comes from Almighty God is given not just for ourselves, but it's also given with a responsibility. And so we really are the keepers of our brothers and sisters. And I think sometimes we tend to forget that. That's particularly important in the issue of immigration. I think it's important in the issue of foreign aid. I think it's also important in what we practice as Catholics in terms of our local Catholic charities, mm-hmm. and then, of course, our participation in Catholic Relief Services.
And I know that you're participating in the Fortnight for Freedom coming up. And I also am aware, of course, of the many challenges that you have as the Archbishop of the Military Archdiocese in looking at issues of religious liberty, of trying to protect the rights of your chaplains and their families. How would you define or describe the state of religious freedom right now in the military?
Well, I think in broad strokes, that religious freedom is respected. No chaplain is going to currently would ever be required to do something that is against the principles of his or her faith. In terms of an individual's practice of his or her faith, that is respected. The areas where we have to be very, very careful are, I would be a big one in promoting that, yes, faith does influence what we do. And there certainly recently there has been a tendency in the military to say, well, you know, you can't wear your faith on your sleeve, or people have been not chaplains but others have been criticized if they have a Bible in their on their desk or something like that. And I think we have to recognize, as an author recently pointed out, that the First Amendment guarantees the freedom of religion, not the freedom from religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to make that distinction. Now, by the same token, religious freedom is compromised in the military by budget cuts, by my inability to provide a sufficient number of priests to minister to the men and women in the armed forces. The budget cuts, obviously, that can be remedied. We're talking about pennies of what the military budget is. So it would really be just a decision that this is important and therefore it should be funded. In terms of the personnel, that's a more difficult problem to resolve. It's not going to be resolved merely by funding.
Mm-hmm. It brings us back in many ways to your suggestion for prayer.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you have, of course, some recent ordinations of new priests and deacons who want to become chaplains. Could you talk about the many challenges, but also the immense joy and opportunities that serving as a chaplain brings to not just the whole archdiocese, but to the whole of the military life in the United States?
Well, I think the chaplain's role is very, very important. He is the only person on a military installation who has absolute confidentiality. I'm not only talking about what would be covered by the secret of confession, but I'm talking about a privilege that a chaplain never has to say who came to him or why someone came to him. So it's very important to have that figure present on our military installations. There is also a tremendous grace, I think, given particularly to priests who are with the men and women when they deploy. Those are moments when people ask fundamental questions, and it's important to have them there, to have the priest there to be able to respond to those questions. Also, the military is the largest single source of vocations in the United States today. If you look at the statistics from the CARA report, you'll find that a good 10 to 15% every year come both from prior service and from those men and women who were, those men who were raised in a military family. Mm-hmm. I was just at the ordination of a transitional diaconate in Atlanta. He and two of his classmates were raised in families where either the mother or the father was an active duty military member. That's significant. And I think that given that the Archdiocese for Military Services serves the youngest population in the United States, most of our people are between the ages of 18 and 28, it is important to have priests there so that some of those vocational desires can be nourished and adequate responses can be given.
Mm-hmm. And you have how many chaplains currently?
At the moment on active duty, I have about 208.
And for the overall population that they to whom they minister, it would be how large?
Well, roughly we would say there's about 900,000, because there's about 300,000 military that self-identify as Catholics. We traditionally multiply that number by three because of their dependents, mm-hmm. who are also subjects of the Archdiocese for the Military Services.
And these chaplains, of course, for those who may not be familiar, are deployed literally all over the world, aren't they?
That is correct. That is correct.
So how do you...
Military installations all over the world.
How do you even begin to assess where to deploy your resources of chaplains? And?
Well, I don't make that decision. Mm-hmm. That is made by the chiefs of chaplains of the three chaplain corps. So the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. I can really only try to influence that decision. We have an agreement with the Navy, for example, that an aircraft carrier doesn't go out without a Catholic priest, because that's about 5,000 people just on the aircraft carrier. That doesn't count the three or four ships that escort the aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm. It is so its own little parish, then, isn't it?
That certainly is. That certainly is. In fact, one of the Navy's best ads is, small parish looking for priest.
And it's also easy to overlook the risks that you face as a chaplain.
That is correct, because obviously you are unarmed, and yet you're in harm's way. Obviously you're also going to be separated from family, friends, support systems. And so it is a sacrifice on their part. For the most part, they do their job very, very well.
Mm-hmm. And for you as the Archbishop, how often do you have to travel? I'm guessing that you're on the road quite a bit.
Roughly 200 days a year, I'm on the road. So that would be about the same for I have four auxiliary bishops who also help me in this ministry, and they also travel constantly.
And for those who may not be aware, that involves Air Force bases, that involves military installations, aircraft carriers, I'm guessing. So it's a fairly demanding life, isn't it?
It is. It is a very demanding life. They're wonderful people, but they are in obscure locations, and we do our best to try and visit. We try to visit every military installation every year.
Oh my. Okay.
With one bishop or another.
Right. And you, of course, served for a number of years in the Vatican Secretary of State and as a papal nuncio. Do you find that there are parallels between your service as a nuncio to your role as Archbishop?
Well, certainly one parallel is the quest for peace. That was certainly something that I did in my 25 years as a diplomat for the Holy See, and it's also something that is very much uppermost in the minds of all of us either are privileged to serve with the military or are in the military, because after 17 years of war, the members of our armed forces are very tired, mm-hmm. and there is an earnest desire that that the diplomats succeed in assuring that we're no longer at war.
and you can have a role in that, I'm guessing.
Yes, well, certainly through prayer, certainly also through encouragement of dialogue, and taking advantage of certainly the many international contacts that are mine just by virtue of the ministry that's been assigned to me.
Mm-hmm. And I know, too, one of your many tasks is providing pastoral care, not just for the needs of soldiers, but also their families.
That is correct. So, and people don't often think about that, but, you know, the family, when someone is deployed, is really in a particular situation that demands special care, and that's why the chapel on a military installation and the community that forms around that chapel becomes very, very important. And then, of course, the Archdiocese is also responsible for the pastoral care of veterans. So that's another area of responsibility where we try to meet the needs of those who are in the medical centers or, mm-hmm. or in some of the other care facilities that are part of the Department for Veterans Affairs.
And what do you find are some of the greatest pastoral needs for dependents, for soldiers and sailors and airmen?
Well, I think certainly a need to feel encouraged in this time of separation. There's also an ability to dialogue that's very important as well, because what you have is a situation where, for instance, the younger members of a family step up and take certain responsibilities, and then when dad or mom comes back, they're expected to fall back into their role as children, and of course that requires some adjustment. There is also one of the most important things is allowing the deployed member, when he returns home, to be able to tell his story, because that's actually one of the ways that whatever trauma has occurred can be healed or can be at least alleviated somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
That all requires a certain sensitivity. It requires an ability to welcome people back, and also to realize wherever they are in this journey.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the initiatives on the part of the Archdiocese? You mentioned the number of young Catholics, of young people on bases, but also, of course, in families.
Well, we're trying desperately, in terms of religious education, we do have a curriculum that goes from pre-K to 12th grade. That's at one level. We're also trying to reach out to the young adults. In fact, this next weekend we will have at Techne, Illinois, the first retreat/conference for young adult Catholics, in an effort to evangelize them, but also to those are always opportunities also to hear what their needs are and to try and respond to their needs. I've also tried to sensitize a little bit my brother bishops about those who return and the families of those deployed, particularly if they worship in communities in territorial dioceses, that there be some awareness of them and some responsiveness to their particular needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a great openness on the part of the bishops for this.
And do you find, too, that chaplains serve as very powerful role models for young people in the military and outside of it?
They certainly do. They certainly do. Because I think because of their training and also because of their willingness to serve in all sorts of situations, and that's a great gift, but it's also not always so easy.
Mm. And of course, the history of the armed forces in the United States is filled with stories of the great examples of chaplains who have given their lives, but also who were martyrs for the faith. I'm thinking especially the recent example of the cause for canonization of Father Capodanno. I know that the diocesan phase has just been closed. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, Father Capodanno is one of those striking figures. He was a Marian Old missionary from Staten Island, New York, was assigned eventually to Hong Kong, and it was there that he came into contact with naval personnel and others who would come to Hong Kong for R&R during the Vietnam conflict. And because of that, he heard about the need for priests and decided to ask his superiors to become a Navy chaplain. He did, and he was sent with the Marines to Vietnam, and actually then was so taken with the pastoral possibilities that this provided that he asked to stay with them or you know, to be sent again with them. And he was one of those chaplains, typical of most chaplains. He was going to be with his Marines. He was going to take care of them. Particularly, he was going to be with them in those moments when they were most in need, when they were under fire. And that's actually how he dies, giving comfort to a Marine. Even though Father was wounded himself, he continued to stay on the front lines and then was eventually felled by the enemy's bullets. But he really died, well, literally with his boots on, but also because that's where he wanted to be. That's how he wanted to take care of those who were assigned to his pastoral care. So he's a great example for chaplains, and I think for priests in general. And of course, the history of the history of the Catholic chaplaincy, with which I'm most familiar, is filled with these figures who gave unstintingly of themselves to meet the needs of those who were entrusted, who were entrusted to their pastoral care. And it's a beautiful history. Significant, I think, is that in this era, in the last century, the chaplains who received the Congressional Medal of Honor were all Catholic priests. Very, very significant.
And a fact that is often not reported.
That's correct.
Yeah. And his cause then was opened, and of course you had the, I know that the difficult task, you have a doctorate in canon law, so it must have been interesting to oversee this diocesan process for his cause. But the amount of detail and the exactitude that has to go into it is very striking, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it has a particular law from the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, and it's very detailed, and it must be respected, because you wouldn't want to have the cause fail on a technicality. So we tried to be very precise, and also we had the advantage that many of the witnesses are still alive. Mm-hmm. So. That helps with a figure who, it's true, died 50 years ago, which at this point in my life doesn't seem that long, but it's still a point where we can, you know, we can still talk to people. So
understood, people who knew him. But isn't this also a wonderful example of the fact that saints are around us today? That in
yes.
the military too, that it is possible to be in the military life and be a saint.
That is correct, and I think we have many, many examples, and it's good to bring these examples forward, and of course that's the whole purpose of canonization, that their lives be worthy of imitation, and so you have to put them before the people of God so that they hear about them.
So,
and it was interesting to talk to my delegate for the cause at the end of the process, because he himself thanked me for the opportunity to work this closely on the life and the virtues of Father Capodanno, because it made an impression on him and on his priesthood.
Mm-hmm. And he had another example of the sacrifice and the selflessness of military chaplains, and anyone who's spent much time around the military certainly recognizes that.
Yes, yes. They are really unique individuals who give unstintingly of themselves for the benefit of others.
Now, for those who may not be aware of it, where does the funding come for your archdiocese?
It all comes from free will donations. So basically, we have various sources, but the archdiocese has to come up with the funds to cover its expenses every year, which amounts to a budget of between $6.5 million and $7 million a year. That does not include the tuitions, the half of the tuition that we pay for co-sponsored seminarians.
And of course, you have the fund, the bill as well of trying for seminarians.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
So if someone would like to donate to the Military Archdiocese, how would they do that?
Probably the simplest way is through the website of the Archdiocese, which is www.milarch.org.
That's www.milarch.org. And if a young man is interested in potentially becoming a chaplain, what would you recommend to them?
I would recommend, well, first of all, that that he talk to you know, his local priest about beginning a process of discernment. But then I would invite him, certainly anyone who's over 18, to come to one of our discernment retreats, which are held in the fall and the spring, in the month of November and the month of March. And we'll, you know, we'll cover any costs involved with a person participating in this retreat. And that can be done by, again, at the same website. There's also, you know, an indication for the vocations office, and the young man could contact Father Aidan Logan, who's the vocations director.
Excellent. Well, Your Excellency, thank you again, and please be assured that you and all of your personnel, priests and staff, are in our prayers.
Well, thank you very much for that. I'm very grateful for that prayerful support.
Well, take care and God bless, Your Excellency.
God bless you, too. Thank you.
To read Matthew's interview with Archbishop Broglio, go to ncregister.com and search for Shepherding God's Military Flock, a conversation with Archbishop Timothy Broglio. And as always, remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Rich Jesse, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.